thoughts? Those are tripping over themselves, down the path of wondering who Catriona is. An older rider, someone from Eratia? Right, he rubs the back of his neck and sighs. Not even the tiniest bit of a chance. Because the thing about the deal you two have with your dragons is that he'll be back here next week, and I'm not remotely in the mood to have my ass kicked after fending off another assassination attempt. I grab his arm and stop walking. Another assassination attempt? He sighs. Yeah, second time someone tried to jump me in the bathing chamber this week. My eyes widen as my heart hammers in my chest. Are you okay? He has the gall to grin. I completely eviscerated some asshole out of second wing while naked and only got a bruise. I'm fine. But back to why you shouldn't mention that comment to my rather moody cousin while you're sleeping with, you know what? I start walking to the middle of the field again. If he doesn't want to process assassination attempts, then we have nothing else to say. I don't know you nearly well enough to discuss who I am or am not sleeping with, Bodhi, I throw over my shoulder. He shoves his hands in his pockets and leans back on his heels. You make a fair point. I made the only point. Tarn's silhouette blocks the moon for a heartbeat before he lands ahead of us. Bodhi grins sheepishly. Air Dragon has arrived in time to save us from the awkwardness of this conversation. Let's get going, Tarn all but snaps. I try not to take it personally. He's been insufferable for days now, but I can't blame him. I can feel his physical pain like a knife to my own chest when he overpowers my emotions. He's in a rush, I tell Bodhi. Thanks for walking me out, humans. Well, fuck, Bodhi swears under his breath as mage lights flicker on behind us, lighting up the field the same way they had the night we flew for war games. Cadet Sorengale, you will delay your launch. Varish amplifies his voice across the field. We turn and see him flanked by two other riders walking our way. Tarn growls in answer. Bodhi and I exchange a glance, but we both remain silent as the trio approaches. What do we do if they try to stop us? I ask Tarn. Feast. Gross. I didn't expect you to leave until morning, Varish says, flashing an oily smile as the two other riders flank us. The stripes on their uniforms declare them as first lieutenants, the same as Mira, one rank above Zayden. It's been a fortnight. I'm on leave. So you are, Varish blinks at me, then looks at the female lieutenant on my left. Nora, search her bag. I'm sorry? I put a step between me and the woman. Your bag, Varish repeats. Article 4, Section 1 of the Codex states that all cadet belongings are subject to search at the discretion of command, I finish for him. Ah, you know your codex. Good. Your bag. I swallow, then roll my shoulders, letting the pack slip off my back before holding it out to the left, never taking my eyes from Varish. The first lieutenant takes the rucksack from my hand. You may leave, Cadet Duran, Varish says. Bodhi moves closer to my side, and the male lieutenant takes a step closer as well, the mage lights catching the signet patch, fire-wielding, on his uniform. As Cadet Sorengale's section leader, I am the next in her chain of command. And as Article 4, Section 2 of the Codex states, her discipline falls to her chain of command before being brought to cadre. I would be negligent in my duty were I to leave her in potential possession of whatever it is you're looking for. Varish narrows his eyes as Nora empties my bag onto the ground. So much for a clean change of clothing. Tarn lowers his head behind me, angling slightly to the side and growling deeply in his throat. At this angle, he can scorch two of them without touching Bodhi or me, which would only leave one for us to dispatch if we had to. Anger prickles along my spine, and I fist my hands like that's going to actually help me contain the burst of power crawling through my veins. Was that really necessary? The other lieutenant asks. He said search, Nora replies before looking up at Varish. Clothing, she says, flipping the pieces over. Her hands tremble when she glances in Tarn's direction. Second year physics text, land navigation manual, and a hairbrush. Give me the book and the manual. Varish holds his hand out to Nora. Need a refresher? I ask, suddenly grateful I left my copy of The Gift of the First Six in my room. Not that it's taught me anything besides the fact that the first six weren't the first riders. They were simply the first to survive. Varish doesn't respond as he flips through the pages, no doubt looking for scrawled secrets in the margins. His jaw flexes when he doesn't find any. Satisfied? I drum my fingers along the sheaths at my thighs. We're done here. He tosses the book onto the pile of clothing. See you in 48 hours, Cadet Sorengale. And don't forget, since your Feathertail decided not to join you for formation again, I will be pondering your punishment for dereliction of duty while you are gone. And with that threat, the trio walks away, the mage lights winking off one by one as they pass, leaving us in the dark again except for the circle of light directly above us. You knew that was going to happen, I glare at Bodhi before crouching in front of my discarded things, packing them back into the bag. That's why you insisted on walking me out. In addition to the very real attempts on all of our lives, Imogen and Aya were attacked today too, coming out of a briefing for third years. We suspected they'd search you, but wanted to confirm, he admits, dropping down to help. They could have died. My heart stutters in my chest, and I quickly fold that fear into the box where I've decided to hide all my feelings this year. Well, all emotions except one, anger. You used me as a test? I jerk the fastener on the pack closed and shove my arms through the straps, hoisting it to my shoulders. Without even telling me? Let me guess, it was Zayden's idea. It was an experiment, he grimaces. You were the control. Then what the fuck was the variable? The bells ring out, the sound faint from here. Check Tarn. It's midnight. You should get going, Bodhi says. Every minute you stay is one fewer that Tarn gets with Sigale. Agreed. Stop using me like I'm some kind of game piece, Bodhi. Each word is sharper than the last. You two want my help? Ask for it. And don't fucking start on me about my shielding abilities. That's no excuse to send me into something unprepared. He looks abashed. Fair point. I nod, then mount the ramp Tarn creates by dropping a shoulder. Moonlight and what little mage light reaches this height is more than sufficient for me to find the saddle. I could navigate the spikes of Tarn's back in the darkest night. I proved that in Resin. There are already two packs twice the size of mine secured behind the saddle.
Good thing they didn't search me, Tarn says.
Are we carrying? I blink twice.
We are, he confirms. Now, get in the saddle before they change their minds, and I'm forced to incinerate your leadership. Later, I'll have more than a few words for the wing leader about not preparing you. Trust me.
Taking a second to secure my pack, too, I settle in for the flight, dragging the leather across my thighs and strapping in. Let's get to them, I say once I'm buckled. Tarn backs up a few steps, no doubt to keep Bodhi clear, and then launches into the night, every wing beat taking us closer to the front lines. And Zayden. An excerpt from Recovered Correspondence of Lieutenant Zayden Ryerson to Cadet Violet Sorengale. Sigale watched me kill another cadet for bullying Garrick during threshing. She says she chose me for my ruthlessness, but I think I just reminded her of my grandfather. Chapter 12. The landscape around the Samara outpost is as severe as the command that runs it. We're high in the Espen Mountains, a mile or two from the eastern border with Poromiel, and surrounded by peaks that are still tipped with snow in the height of summer. The nearest village is a half-hour flight. There's not even a trading post within walking distance. This is as cut off from society as it gets.
Be careful,
Tern orders me, waiting behind me in the field where he landed.
It's known to be brutal as a first assignment.
So naturally, they'd send Zayden here. I'll be all right, I promise, and my shields are up. To be sure, I check the walls of my mental archives where I ground in my power, and can't help the little bounce in my step when I see only a hint of light from my bonds coming from the doorways. I am definitely getting better at this. I head for the entrance to the mammoth fortress that rises before me, its dark red stone cutting into the crisp blue sky. It's probably laid out like Athbeen and Montserrat, but it's easily twice as big as either. Two companies of infantry and 18 dragons and their riders are stationed here. Something sways up high on the wall, and I look to see a man in infantry colors sitting in a cage about 4 stories above me. Well, all right then. It's a little after 8 in the morning, so I can't help but wonder if he's been up there all night. There's a hum in my veins that only grows stronger as I walk up the ramp that leads to the portcullis, where 2 guards are stationed. A platoon passes by, headed out for a morning run.
It's the wards,
Tern says. They didn't feel like this at Montserrat, I tell him.
They're stronger here, and since your signet has manifested, you're more sensitive to them now.
His tone is tight, and when I glance back over my shoulder, I note that all the soldiers give him a wide berth, taking a path off to the side of the field. You don't have to watch my back, I say, reaching the top of the ramp. This is an outpost. I'm safe here.
There's a drift on the other side of the mountains, a mile beyond the border. Sigale just told me. You're not safe until you're behind the walls or with the wing leader.
I don't bother reminding him that Zayden isn't a wing leader anymore as my stomach jumps into my throat. A friendly drift?
Define friendly.
Great. We're not on the front, we are the front. The guards at the gate stand taller when they take in my flight leathers, but remain silent as I pass. They're not acting like there's a drift across the ridgeline.
Apparently, it's commonplace.
Even better.
There, I'm all safe, behind the walls, I tell Tern, walking into the bailey of the fortress. At least it's cooler here than at Bezgaeth, but I'm not sure I'd like to experience winter at this altitude. Or Aracia's come to think of it.
Call if you need me. I'll be nearby.
A second later, wing beats fill the air. Like hell am I going to call him for anything. In fact, I'll consider these next 24 hours a success if I can block him out altogether. I've been on the wrong mental side of the bond during one of his trysts with Sigale, and no thank you. I pass by several platoons of infantry standing in formation, and note the infirmary off to the right in the same location as Montserrat's, but I'm the only person in black. Where the hell are all the riders? I stifle a yawn. There wasn't much sleep to be had in the saddle. And locate the entrance to the barracks that make up the southern side of the fortress. The corridor is dimly lit as I walk through, passing the office of the scribes, but I find the stairs at the end. A sensation of unwelcome familiarity crawls along my skin as I climb.
Breathe.
This outpost isn't deserted. There isn't a horde of Venon and Wyvern waiting to be spotted from the highest point, either. It's only the same layout because almost all outposts are built from the same plans. I push open the door to the 3rd floor without encountering anyone.
Odd.
One side of the hallway is lined with windows that open to the bailey, and the other with equidistant wooden doors. My pulse picks up as I reach for the handle of the 2nd door. It swings open with a squeak, and I recognize the tingle of energy that rushes over my skin, leaving chills in its wake as I step through the wards into Zayden's room. Zayden's empty room. Shit. I sigh in pure disappointment as I drop my pack near his desk. His room is austere, with serviceable furniture and a door that probably leads to a neighboring room, but there are touches of him here and there. He's in the books that sit stacked along the shelves of the bookcase by the window, the rack of weapons I recognize from his room at Bezgaev, and the two swords that sit near the door, like he'll be back any second to retrieve them. The only softness to be found is in the heavy black drapes, standard issue in the room of a rider who might have to fly night patrols, and the plush, dark gray blanket covering his bed, his very large bed. Nope, not thinking about that. What the hell am I supposed to do if he's not here? The swords say he's not out flying, so I close my eyes and open up my senses, finding the shadow that's only present when he's near. If I found him that night on the parapet, surely I can do it here. He's close, but he must have his shields locked because he doesn't reach out like he usually would when I'm close. The bond feels like it's tugging me downward, like he's actually under me. I close Zayden's door on my way out and follow the tugging sensation, making my way to the staircase and then descending. I pass the arched entrance to the second floor, catching a glimpse of a wide stone hallway with more barracks doors. Then the entrance to the first, and finally reaching the sublevel of the fortress where natural light ends with the staircase on a stone floor. Mage lights illuminate two possible paths along the foundation of the fortress, both dimly lit and as welcoming as a dungeon. The scent of damp earth and metal permeates the air. Shouts and cheers come from down a corridor to the right, echoing off the walls and floor. I follow the pull of the bond that direction and find a pair of infantry guards about 20 yards from the stairs who take one look at my uniform and step aside, allowing me access to a room carved out of the very foundation. Noise overwhelms every other sense when I enter the chamber, and shock halts my feet inside the doorway. What in the gods' names is going on? More than a dozen riders, all in black, stand along the sides of the square-shaped, windowless room that looks better suited for storage than occupation. They're all leaning over a thick wooden railing, intently watching something in the excavated pit below. I take the empty space on the rail directly ahead of me, finding myself between a veteran rider with a grizzled beard on my left and a woman who looks a few years older than me on the right. Then I see who's below, and my heart stops. Zayden. And he is shirtless. So is the other rider as they circle each other, their fists raised like they're sparring. But there's no mat beneath them, only a packed dirt floor decorated with suspicious patterns of crimson, both old and fresh. They're equally matched in height, but the other rider is bulky, built like Garrick, and looks to have about 20 pounds on Zayden, who's cut in deep, muscular lines. The rider swings for Zayden's face, and I white-knuckle the rough railing, holding my breath as Zayden easily evades the punch, delivering one of his own to his opponent's ribs. The riders around me cheer, and I'm pretty sure I see money changing hands across the pit. This isn't sparring. This is straight-up fighting. And the way Zayden hit him, he's holding back. Why are they, I ask the silver-barred lieutenant next to me, my words dying as Zayden dips and spins, avoiding another attempted hit. There's a definite sparkle in those dark eyes as he deftly jumps back again, denying his opponent's strike. My pulse jumps. Damn, he's fast. Fighting? The woman finishes my question. Yes. I keep my gaze centered on Zayden, who lands quick, consecutive punches to the other rider's kidneys. There's only one pass for lieutenants this weekend, she says, moving a little closer. Jarrett has it, and Ryerson wants it. So they're fighting for it? I peel my eyes from Zayden long enough to glance sideways at the rider beside me. She has short brown hair, sharp, bird-like features, and a thumbprint-sized scar on her jawline. Leave in pride, Lieutenant Colonel de Grenzy's rules. You want it? You fight for it. You want to keep it? You'd better be good enough to defend it. They have to fight for passes? Isn't that brutal? And wrong? Extreme? Horrible? And detrimental to wing morale? He's fighting so Sigale will have time off to spend with Taryn. So he'll have time with me. Brutal? Hardly, she scoffs. No blades, no signets, it's just a fist fight. You want to see brutal, go and visit one of the coastal outposts with nothing to do but turn on one another. She leans forward and shouts as Zayden deflects the next punch, then grabs Jarrett by the biceps and throws him to his back. Damn, I really thought Jarrett was going to take him in less time. A slow, proud smile spreads across my face. He won't take him at all, I shake my head, staring at Zayden with more than a little delight as he waits for Jarrett to gain his feet. Zayden's playing with him. The rider turns toward me, her gaze scanning me in clear assessment, but I'm too busy watching Zayden land hit after a carefully placed hit to bother with what the lieutenant thinks about me. You're her, aren't you? The rider asks, her appraisal pausing on my hair. Her who? Here we go. Lieutenant Sorengale's sister. Not General Sorengale's daughter. Not the cadet Zayden is stuck with because of Taryn. You know my sister? That earns her a glance. She has a hell of a right hook, she nods, her knuckles grazing the scar on her jaw. She does, I agree, my smile widening. Looks like Mira left her mark. Zayden lands a solid hit to Jarrett's jaw with a crack. It appears Ryerson does too. He does. You sound pretty confident, she turns her attention back to the fight. I am. My confidence in Zayden is almost arrogance. Gods, he's beautiful. The mage lights illuminating the chamber highlight every carved line of roped muscle on his chest and abs and play off the angles of his face. And when he turns, the 107 scars that mark his back catch the light under Sigale's relic. I stare. I can't help it. His body is a work of art, honed to lethal perfection. I know every inch of it, and yet I'm still gawking, transfixed like it's the first time I've seen him half-dressed. This should absolutely not be turning me on, but the way he moves, the lethal grace in each and every calculated strike. Yep, turned on. Maybe it's toxic as hell, but it's pointless to deny that every single part of me is attracted to every facet of Zayden. And it's not just his body, it's everything. Even the darkest parts of him, the parts I know are merciless, willing to annihilate anyone and everything who stands between him and a goal. Pull me in like a moth to a fucking flame. My heart pounds like a drumbeat and my stupid chest aches just watching him maneuver around the floor of the pit, toying with his opponent. I've missed watching him in the gym, sparring with Garrick. I've missed being with him on the mat, feeling his body over mine as he puts me on my back over and over again. I've missed the tiny moments in my day when our eyes would meet in a crowded hallway, the bigger moments when I've had him all to myself. I'm so damn in love with him that it hurts, and for the moment, I can't remember why I'm denying myself. The rider on my left shouts, and Zayden's gaze jerks upward, colliding with mine. Surprise registers on his features for all of a heartbeat before his opponent swings, his fist slamming into Zayden's jaw with a sound that makes my stomach twist. I gasp as Zayden's head snaps sideways with the force of the blow. He staggers backward to the cheers of the riders around me. Stop playing around and end it, I say through our bond, using it for the first time since Resson. Always so violent. He thumbs a drop of blood off the split in his lower lip, his gaze flashing to mine, and I swear I see a hint of a smile before he turns on Jarrett. Jarrett swings once, then twice, missing Zayden both times. Then Zayden strikes with two quick punches, putting his full weight behind them, unlike before, and sending Jarrett to his hands and knees in the dirt. Jarrett's head hangs as he shakes it slowly, blood dripping from his mouth. "Damn," the rider next to me says. "Exactly. Is it wrong to smirk? Because I can't seem to control my facial muscles." Zayden stands back as the riders fall silent in the chamber, and then he extends his hand. Jarrett's chest heaves for a tense minute before he looks up at Zayden and shoves away the offered hand. He taps the floor twice, and while some riders around me groan, and yes, that's money changing hands in the form of gold coins, others clap a couple of times. Jarrett spits blood onto the floor, then stands upright, nodding at Zayden respectfully. The match, if that's what this can be called, is apparently over. The riders head my way, filtering past me for the door. Zayden says something to Jarrett that I can't hear, then uses the metal rungs embedded into the stone's masonry at the far end of the pit to climb out. He reaches the top, then takes his shirt from where it's draped across the railing and comes in my direction, watching me with enough heat in his gaze to set my already humming body on fire. "Yeah, definitely can't remember why I'm denying myself any part of this man." "Looks like he won the pass," the woman next to me says. "I'm Cornelia Sahali, by the way. Violet Sorengale. I know it's rude, but I can't make myself look away from Zayden as he turns the corner approaching from the left. He runs his tongue over the small cut at the side of his lower lip as if testing it, then tugs his shirt on. Taking away the show should cool my blood, but it doesn't. Pretty sure dumping a bucket of snowy slush from the nearby peaks over my head couldn't lessen the heat either. I'd probably just steam. Gods, I'm screwed when it comes to this man. It doesn't matter that he hurt me, didn't trust me. I don't even know if I trust him, but I want him.
"Good job, Ryerson," Lieutenant Sahali says to Zayden. "I'll tell the major to take you off the patrol roster for 48 hours.
24, he corrects her, his eyes on me. "I only need 24 hours. Jarrett can have the other 24.
Because I'll be gone."
"Suit yourself." She clamps Jarrett on the shoulder in consolation as he walks by, then follows him out.
We're alone.
"You're early," Zayden says, but the look in his eyes is anything but condemnation.
I lift a brow and try to ignore the way my palms itch to touch him.
"Is that a complaint?"
"No," he shakes his head slowly. "I just wasn't expecting you until noon."
Turns out Taren flies pretty damn fast when he's not being held back by a riot.
Gods, why is it so hard to breathe suddenly? The air between us is thick and my heart thrums as my gaze wanders to his mouth. He's killed people for me before, so why is him fighting for a weekend pass, stripping every ounce of self-control straight out of my bloodstream?
"Violet."
Zayden's voice drops to that low, quiet tone he only ever uses when we're alone, and usually naked, very naked.
"Hmm? Gods, I miss the feel of all his skin against all of mine. Tell me what's spinning around that beautiful head of yours."
He moves closer, invading my space without touching me.
"Fuck. I want him to touch me, even if it's a bad idea, a really, really bad idea."
"Does it hurt?" I lift my fingertip to the corner of my lip where his is split. He shakes his head.
"I've had worse. It's what I get for blocking with my shields to concentrate on the fight. Otherwise, I would have felt you. Look at me."
He takes my chin between his thumb and forefinger and gently tilts my head back before searching my eyes.
"What are you thinking?"
because I can read a lot into the way you're looking at me, but I'm going to need the words. I want him. How hard is that to say? My tongue ties. What would giving into this insatiable need for him mean? That you're human? I'm about 3 seconds away from carrying you up to my bedroom to continue this conversation. His hand slides along my jaw, his thumb caressing my lower lip. Not your room. I shake my head. You, me, bed. Not a good idea at the moment. Too tempting. As I remember, which I do often, we don't always need a bed. His other hand palms my waist. My thighs clench. Violet, I cannot kiss this man. I can't. But would it really be the end of the world if I did? It's not like it would be the first time. Shit, I'm going to break, even if it's only for this moment. Hypothetically, if I wanted you to kiss me, but only kiss me, I start. His mouth is on mine before I finish. Yes, this is exactly what I need. My lips part for him, and there's no hesitation in the glide of his tongue against mine. He groans, and the sound reverberates through my very bones as I wrap my arms around his neck. Home. Gods, he tastes like home. I hear the door shut a second before my back is pressed against the rough wall of the chamber. Zayden slides his hands beneath my thighs, then lifts me so we're level as he lays expert claim to every line and recess of my mouth, like this is the only time he'll get, like kissing me is more vital than his next breath. Or maybe that's the way I'm kissing him back. Whatever, I don't care who is kissing whom as long as we don't stop. I lock my ankles at the small of his back, bringing our bodies flush, and my breath catches at the heat of his skin radiating through the fabric of his uniform and my leathers. And suddenly, it's too much and not enough. This was a bad idea. A teasing taste of everything I want, and yet I can't bring myself to stop. There's nothing outside this kiss, no war, no lies, no secrets. There's only his mouth, his hands sweeping up my sides, his desire matching the fire of mine. This is where I want to live, where nothing else matters but the way he makes me feel. Like a moth to a damned flame. The lament slips from my mind into our mental pathway. He's gravity, pulling me back to him by the force of his existence. I'm more than willing to let you burn me. Wait, that's not what I meant. He cradles the back of my head, protecting me from the coarse stone, and angles for a deeper kiss. Gods, yes, deeper, more. I can't get enough. I'll never get enough. Energy arcs between us, hotter with every kiss, every flick of his tongue. Flames of need dance across my skin, leaving chills in their wake before settling deep within me, burning dangerously, reminding me that Zayden knows exactly how to sate this unquenchable desire. He has the maddening ability to addict and satisfy all in the same breath. My hands slide into his hair as his lips slip down my throat, and my pulse leaps when he finds that sweet spot right above the collar of my flight jacket, then mercilessly worships it with his mouth. I'm instantly liquid, melting into him. Gods, I've missed the taste of you. Even his mental voice comes across as a groan. The feel of you in my arms. I bring my hands to his face and pull him back to my lips. He sucks my tongue into his mouth and I whimper because I can say the exact same thing about him. I've missed everything about his taste, his kiss, him. If any of those buttons on my flight jacket come undone, they're all coming undone. The slant of his mouth over mine again and again makes me feel alive for the first time since... Gods, I can't even remember. since the last time he kissed me.
His hand squeezes my waist gently, then stretches up, the tips of his fingers reaching just beneath my breasts.
Fuck it. The jacket can come off. So can the top, the armor, everything that separates me from him. I reach for the buttons.
But he eases his kiss, taking it from urgent and deep to thorough and deliciously slow.
We should stop.
What if I don't want to? The physical sound that leaves me is pure denial. I'm not ready for this to end, not ready to return to the reality where we're not together, even if I'm the one standing in our way.
We have to, or I won't be able to keep the only kiss limitation of your hypothetical question.
His hand drifts to my ass as his mouth softens, drawing on my lower lip with one last lingering kiss.
Fuck, I want you.
Then don't stop. I look him in the eyes so he knows I mean it. We can keep it to nothing but sex we did last year.
Not that it worked well.
Violet. It's part plea, part moan, and the war in his eyes makes my chest tighten.
You have no idea how badly I want to peel those pants off your amazing ass and fuck you until you're hoarse from screaming my name, so limp from orgasms that you can't fathom leaving my bed ever again, and every tree around here goes up in flames from lightning strikes.
His hand slides from behind my head to the nape of my neck.
Until you remember exactly how good we are together.
I never forgot. It's a whimper. My body is still humming.
I'm not talking about physically.
He leans in and kisses me softly. It's sweet. Tender. Everything I don't want to feel. Not when it comes to him. Heat and lust I can cope with, but the rest?
Zayden,
I whisper, shaking my head slowly. He studies my face for a heartbeat and masks the flash of disappointment with a half smile.
Exactly.
He gently lowers me back to my feet, then steadies me, holding onto my waist when my knees wobble.
I want you more than my next breath, but I can't fuck you into looking at me like you used to. I refuse to use sex as a tool to get you back.
He takes my hand and presses it to my chest.
Not when I want to be here.
My eyes widen, and apprehension knots my stomach.
That's what I thought.
He sighs, but it's not defeat tightening his mouth. It's frustration.
You still don't trust me. And that's all right. I told you I'm not in this for a battle. I'm winning the damned war.
I'm a fucking fool for saying this, but when haven't I been a fool when it comes to you?
Excuse me?
I bristle. His memory must be faulty because I'm the one who's been the fool for him.
Let me get this out.
He glances at my mouth.
I'll kiss you whenever you want because my self-control is shit where you're involved.
Whenever I want? My brows shoot up.
What the hell is happening right now?
Yes, whenever you want. Because I'll live with my mouth attached to yours if I do it whenever I want. He retreats a couple of steps, and I immediately miss the feel of his hands, the warmth of his skin.
But I'm begging you, Violet. Don't offer me your body unless you're offering me everything. I want you more than I want to fuck you. I want those three little words back.
I stare at him, my mouth dropping open slightly. He's not asking to hear that I want him. He wants to hear that I love him.
It's new territory for me, too.
He rakes his hands through his hair.
No one is more surprised than I am. Trust me.
I'm sorry, but weren't you the one last year who said we could have all the sex we wanted as long as we kept feelings out of it? I fold my arms across my chest.
See? Fucking fool.
He looks up at the rough-beamed ceiling like it has the answers.
Last year, I would have used any method it took to win you back. But for those 3 days you were unconscious, all I did was sit there and watch you sleep, thinking of everything I would have done differently.
Determination is etched on every line of his face when he brings his gaze back to mine.
This is me doing things differently. Somehow, in the last month, we've managed to switch roles. This is me proving myself to you.
He steps back and pulls the door open, gesturing for me to walk out first, then rests his hand on the small of my back as we walk down the hall.
We're not there yet, but you'll trust me again at some point.
Sure, as soon as you agree to stop keeping secrets from me.
How the hell is this my fault?
His sigh sounds like it's ripped out of his very soul.
You need to trust me, even with secrets, for this to work.
I grab onto the stair railing and take the stairs two at a time. That's not going to happen.
It will, he says as we near the ground floor, then changes the subject. Are you hungry?
I need to wash up first. My nose crinkles. Pretty sure I smell like I've been flying 8 hours. Why don't you head on into my room and I'll bring food? His hand slips from my lower back as we make our way into his barracks room. He points to the left and says, that door leads to a private bathing chamber. There's no way you got a private bathing chamber as a brand new lieutenant, I sputter. Mira doesn't even have one.
You'd be amazed what you can get when no one wants to share space with Fen Ryerson's son, he answers quietly.
My stomach sinks. I can't think of a single thing to say to that.
Don't look so sad. Garrick has to share with 4 other riders.
Go. He motions to the door again. I'll be right back. An hour later, I'm clean and fed, and Zayden is sitting at his desk, fiddling with something that looks like a crossbow, but smaller. As I sit on his bed and run a brush through my damp hair, I can't help but smile at the steady feeling of what's becoming routine. Zayden preparing a weapon while I sit on a bed.
But they didn't search Taryn? He asks without looking up.
Nope, just dumped my stuff on the ground. My gaze catches momentarily on a palm-sized gray stone with a decorative black rune on his nightstand, before I spot a piece of grass that made the journey here from the flight field and flick it off my arm.
Did they search Sigil?
He shakes his head.
Only me and Garrick, and every other new lieutenant leaving Besgaeth with a rebellion relic.
They know you've been smuggling something out. I lean over the edge of the high bed and drop my brush into my bag. Toss me a sharpening stone.
They suspect.
He reaches into the top right drawer of his desk, taking out the heavy gray sharpening stone. He leans over to hand it to me, careful not to brush his fingers along mine, and then goes back to tinkering with his weapon.
Thank you.
I grip the stone, then take the first knife from my thigh sheath and begin sharpening. They're only as good as they are honed, but no amount of busying my hands is going to make the next question any easier to ask without feeling like I'm now the one keeping things from Zayden. I choose my words carefully. When we were at the lake, before Resin, you said the only thing that can kill a Venon is what powers the wards.
Yes.
He leans back in his chair, one eyebrow raised, his bow forgotten. The daggers are made of the material that powers the wards, I guess. The alloy Brennan mentioned. Zayden opens the bottom drawer and moves some things around before pulling out a replica of the dagger I used to kill the Venon on Tarn's back. He walks over to me and holds it out, hilt first. I take it from his hand, and the weight and hum of power coming from the blade are instantly nauseating. Whether from the energy or the memory of the last time I held one, I'm unsure. Either way, I breathe deeply and remind myself I am not on Taryn's back. There's no one trying to kill me or him. I'm in Zayden's bedroom. Zayden's very warded bedroom. Safe.
no safer place on the continent, really.
The blade itself is silver, sharpened on both edges, and the hilt is the same matte black of the one I used in resin, the same that had been in my mother's desk last year. I run my finger along the medallion in the hilt that's a duller gray and decorated with a rune.
That piece is the alloy. He sits next to me on the bed. The metal in the hilt? It's a specific blend of materials smelted into what you see there. It's not power in itself, but it's capable of holding power. The wards themselves originate from the veil near Besgaeth, but they only reach so far. These, he taps the medallion, hold extra power to boost the wards and extend them. The more material, the stronger the wards. There's an entire armory of them downstairs boosting the wards. The details are classified, but that's why outposts are placed strategically, to keep our borders from developing weak points.
But how could the wards ever falter if these power them constantly? I brush my thumb over the alloy, and my own power rises, charging the air.
Because they only hold so much power. Once it's used, it has to be imbued again.
Hold on, imbued with power?
Yes, imbuing is a process of leaving power in stasis in an object. A rider has to pour their own power into it, which is a skill not a lot of us have. He glances meaningfully at me. And don't ask, we're not getting into how that works tonight.
Have they always been placed in daggers?
He shakes his head. No, that started right before the rebellion. My guess is Melgrin had a vision of how an upcoming battle is going to go, and these were central to his victory. Once Sigale chose me at threshing, we started to work to smuggle out a few daggers at a time, to supply what drifts we could make friendly contact with.
Aracia needs a forge to smelt the alloy, to make more weapons.
Yes. It takes a dragon to fire a crucible, which we have, and a luminary to intensify dragon fire hot enough to smelt, he says.
I nod, staring at the thumb-sized medallion. How can something so small be the key to our entire continent's survival?
So you just put the alloy into a dagger and get an instant venom killer? A smile tugs at his mouth. It's a little more complicated than that.
What do you think came first, I ask, studying the dagger? The wards or the ability to boost them? Or are they intertwined?
That's all classified. He takes the dagger back and returns it to the desk drawer. So, how about we work on your shields instead of worrying about Navarre's? I yawn.
I'm tired.
Atos won't care. He slides into my mind easily. Fine, I lean back, bracing my weight on my palms and building my mental shields quickly, block by block.
Do your worst.
His smile makes me regret the challenge.
An excerpt from Article 5, Section 7, The Dragon Rider's Codex. Though the chain of command may be consulted, the final say in any academic punishment or repercussion lies with the Commandant's office. Chapter 13.
You wouldn't happen to know how to raise wards, would you? I ask Taryn as we approach Besgaeth from the southeast the next day, squinting into the afternoon sun. The headwind added an extra couple of hours onto the flight, making my hips protest and almost outright rebel.
Despite what you may assume, I am not 600 years old.
Figured I'd ask, just in case you were holding back secret dragon knowledge.
I'm always holding back secret dragon knowledge, but wards are not among it.
His shoulders tense, rising slightly, and the beats of his wings slow.
We're being ordered to the practice grounds. Carr and Varish are waiting.
My stomach plummets even though our altitude hasn't changed. He threatened he'd be pondering my punishment for not forcing Andarna to participate in maneuvers. I should have taken his warning more seriously. Tarn's low growl vibrates through his entire body.
What are your wishes?
Not sure I get a choice. A deep sense of foreboding crawls into my throat.
There is always a choice.
He maintains direction, even though he'll have to bank soon to change course to the practice grounds. I can handle whatever he wants to punish me with, if it means keeping Andarna safe. We go. An hour later, I'm not sure I'm handling anything as much as I am enduring.
Again, Professor Carr orders, his thin white hair flopping with every gust of wind as we stand on the mountain peak we use when training my signet.
And to think, this is only a warning. Fatigue washes over me again, but I know better than to complain. I'd made that mistake somewhere around Strike 25, and it had only added another mark to the tab Professor Carr was keeping in his notebook while Major Varish supervised from his side.
Again, Cadet Sorengale,
Varish repeats the command, smiling at me like he's simply exchanging pleasantries. Their dragons, Bruggen and Solas, stand as far back as possible without falling off the mountain. Tarn had lunged for their necks, snapped, and pulled back with inches to spare around Strike 13. It was the first time I'd ever seen dragons scurry.
Unless you'd rather spend the foreseeable future in the brig.
Tarn's chest rumbles in a low growl as he stands behind me, his claws digging into the bare rock of the mountaintop. There's only so much he can do, though. While he's bound by the Empyrean, I have to follow the rules of the Quadrant or risk the brig, and I'd rather bring down 1,000 lightning strikes than spend one night locked in a cage at Varish's mercy. When I don't move, Carr sends me a pleading look, his gaze darting to Varish. I sigh but lift my hands, my arms trembling as I reach for Tarn's power. Then I ground my feet in the mental construct of the archives in my mind so I don't slip away into the fire that threatens to consume me. Swift and fast, the power rises again, and sweat beads on my face and drips down my spine as I struggle to control it. Anger, lust, fear. It's always the most extreme of my emotions that bring on the strikes. It's rage that fuels me now as I summon that sizzling hot energy and release it, cracking open the sky with another lightning strike that hits a nearby peak.
32,
Carr jots it down. There's no care for if I can aim, not a single consideration for mastery or strength. Their only goal here is to wear me down, while mine is to hold on to whatever scraps of self-control I can muster so I don't wake Andarna.
Again. Varish orders.
Gods, my body feels like it's cooking itself alive. I reach for the buttons on my flight jacket and yank them open, letting some of the infernal heat escape.
Violet?
Andarna asks sleepily. Guilt slams into me harder than a lightning strike.
I'm fine, I promise her.
Waking is dangerous to the growth process,
Tarn lectures.
Sleep.
What's happening? She's alarmingly alert now.
Nothing I can't handle.
Not quite a lie, right?
I've never seen her produce more than 26 strikes in an hour, Major.
She's at risk of overheating and burning out if you continue to push like this,
Carr says to Varish.
She can take it just fine.
He looks at me like he knows. Like he was there at Resson, watching me hurl bolt after bolt at the Wyvern. If he's the picture of control, then maybe I should be glad I don't seem to have any.
All it will take is her slipping in her grounding or exhausting her physically, and she will burn out,
Carr warns, his gaze shifting nervously.
Punishing her for insubordination is one thing, but killing her is quite another.
Again,
Varish lifts his brows at me.
Unless your golden one would like to fly up and say hello since she failed to appear as ordered. If she joins us, we'll only task you with 3 more.
This is about me? My shoulders drop and my stomach hits the ground.
This is an example of what happens when dragons choose poorly, Terran counters. Sola should never have given this barbarian more power.
I don't want to submit her for tests or anything barbaric, Varish cajoles, as though he'd heard Terran's words. I just want her to understand that she is not above the structure of command.
I fucking hate him, I tell Terran. I can feel this draining you. I'll come,
and Darna starts.
You'll do no such thing, or you risk every feather tail in the veil, I remind her. Do you want someone who takes joy in the pain of others like Varish bonding a hatchling?
And Darna growls in pure frustration. Terran angles his wing, directing the cooling wind over my scalding skin.
Well? Varish asks, tugging his cloak around him as steam rises from my body.
Terran snarls.
Humans, do not command dragons. And that includes you.
I lift my impossibly heavy arms and reach for power again. Around strike 40, my knees buckle, and I crumple to the hard rock. The ground rushes up at me, and I throw out my hands, sending pain shooting through my left shoulder as the joint partially subligates from the impact. My mouth waters from the instant nausea, but I cradle my left arm and force myself to my knees just to take the weight off the joint. Extending his neck, Terran roars so loudly at Varish and Carr that the notebook blows out of Carr's hands and tumbles down the mountain, vanishing from sight.
Silver One is done, he shouts.
They can't hear you, I remind him, breathing through the pain.
Their dragons can.
If she dies, you will summon the wrath of not only General Sorengale, but General Melgrin. Her signet is the weapon generals dream of in this war.
Carr glances between Varish and me.
And if that's not enough to encourage a degree of caution, Vice Commandant, then remember her death will cost you two of the most powerful dragons on the continent and Lieutenant Ryerson's irreplaceable ability to wield shadows.
Ah, yes, that pesky mating bond.
Varish clicks his tongue and cocks his head to the side, studying me like I'm nothing but an experiment for him to play with.
One more. Just to prove that you can listen to orders if your dragon will not. Silver One,
I can do it.
I stumble to my feet and pray my shoulder will hold if I tuck my elbow in tight to my body. For Endarna. For the other hatchlings protected in the veil, I can do it. My muscles shake and cramp, and my shoulder screams as though there's a dagger in the joint, but I raise my palms and reach for Terran's power anyway. I make the connection and let the energy flood through me one more time. I wield, and lightning crashes, but my arms cramp as the strike hits the nearest peak. The muscles twisting and bunching in an unnatural way, causing me to physically hold the power I usually release right away.
Fuck, I can't let it go.
Silver One,
Terran shouts. Power lashes through me, extending the strike, which cleaves a section from the northernmost ridgeline ahead of me. The rock crashes down the mountain slope, and still the lightning flows like an incandescent blade, cutting away the terrain. I can't move, can't drop my hands, can't even twitch my fingers. This is going to kill me. Terran, Sigale, Zayden, it's going to kill us all. Fear and panic roll into one, seizing my mind with the one emotion I can't afford. Panic.
Cut it off mentally,
Terran bellows as the strike goes on, and in the distance I hear Endarna cry. My very bones catch fire, and a scream rips from my throat as I shove mentally at the doors to my archives. The strike ends, and I stagger backward, falling against Terran's foreleg and crumpling between his talons. Every breath is a struggle.
Carr swallows hard.
We're done for the day.
I couldn't stand if I wanted to.
Varish examines the destruction I caused and turns toward me.
Fascinating. You'll both be indispensable once you come to heal.
He turns then, his cloak billowing in the wind as he walks to Solas.
This is the only warning you'll get, Cadet Sorengale.
The threat hits like a punch to the stomach, but I can't think around the blistering heat. Carr hikes over, then puts the back of his hand against my forehead and hisses.
You're burning up, he glances at Tern. Tell your dragon to carry you directly to the courtyard. You won't make it from the flight field. Get food and a cold bath.
There's something suspiciously close to sympathy in his eyes as he looks me over.
And while I agree that we do not command dragons, perhaps you could talk Andarna into making an appearance. You are a rare, powerful signet, Cadet Sorengale. It would be a travesty to use your training sessions in this manner again.
I'm not a signet. I'm a person. But I'm too damned hot, too tired to make the words form. Not that it matters. He doesn't see me that way. Carr never has. To him, we are the sum of our powers and nothing more. My chest heaves, but even the cool air of the mountaintop can't touch the burn sizzling in my veins. Tern wraps his claw around me, securing a talon under each arm to lock my limp body into position. Then launches, leaving Carr beneath us on the peak. We're airborne in an instant. Or maybe it's an hour. Time has no meaning. It's all just pain, beckoning me to let go, to release my soul from the prison of my body.
You will not let go,
he orders as we fly toward Bezgaeth, moving faster than I've ever felt him go before. The air rushing by feels so damn good, but it's not enough to reach the furnace in my lungs or the molten marrow of my bones. Mountains and valleys pass under me in a blur before I recognize the walls of the quadrant, but Tern blows by the courtyard and then plummets to the valley below.
The river. Water. Cold. Clear water.
I've already called for support.
My stomach lurches as he pulls up to a hover at the last second, my body swaying from the change in momentum.
Hold your breath.
It's his only warning before water covers me from head to toe, gushing with bone-crushing force, icy from the last of the summer runoff. The contrast threatens to crack every part of me, to peel me away layer by searing layer. I've lived with pain my entire life, but this agony is beyond my capability to endure. Soundlessly, I scream, air gushing from my lungs as I dangle from Tern's claw, the water forcing the heat from my body, saving me with the same pummeling blows that tear at my skin. Tern yanks my head above water and I gasp for breath.
Almost there,
he tells me, holding me in the rapids. The water beats at me mercilessly, but lowers the temperature of my body until the last of the flames in my bones extinguish.
Violet!
Someone bellows from the shoreline. My teeth chatter as my pulse slows.
There.
Tern walks to the bank. I hadn't even realized he'd been standing in the river with me, and deposits me in the long summer grass beneath the row of trees that grow along the Jacobos. I lie limp, fighting for the energy to take my next breath as my heart beats slower and slower. Summoning all my energy, I force my lungs to expand, to draw in air.
Violet!
Imogen calls out from somewhere to the right, then falls to her knees beside me a moment later.
What the hell happened to you?
Too many strikes.
A rough blanket lands on my shoulders as I shake, water dripping from my nose, my chin, the unbuttoned edges of my flight jacket, which miraculously made the trip too. Bone-shattering cold has replaced all the heat, but I'm breathing normally again at least.
Oh, shit.
Bodhi settles at my other side, reaching for my shoulders, then retreating.
You're so red.
That's Aya, I think.
Glane says it's burnout, Imogen says, her hands surprisingly gentle on my back. Tern called for her. What do we do, Violet? You're the only lightning wielder I know.
I just need...
I twist to the side, my legs curling under me, the words punctuated by the chatter of my teeth against one another.
A minute.
I look up at the trunk of the familiar sprawling oak tree in front of me and concentrate on holding myself together.
Kyr says she needs food now that she's cooled down, Bodhi adds.
A green would know, I says with certainty. Food it is.
How did this happen? Imogen asks. Car? I nod.
And Varish.
Bodhi's warm brown face appears in front of mine.
Fuck.
He tugs the edges of the blanket closed around me.
This is because of Andarna?
Yes. Bodhi's eyes widen. Are you fucking kidding me? Imogen's voice rises. He used your signet as a punishment for Andarna not showing for flight maneuvers?
That asshole,
Aya seethes, shoving a hand through her dark hair as she exchanges a look with Bodhi. After a minute, I find the strength to hold the blanket myself. At least my muscles are working again. Longing rips through me as I stare up at the tree, its wide trunk, which I know bears the scar from 2 knife marks.
I want Zayden.
It's illogical. He couldn't have stopped Varish. I don't need his protection. I don't need him to carry me back to the dorms. I just want him. He's the only person I want to talk to about what happened on that mountain.
I think we need to get her back to the dorms, Imogen says.
I'll handle it, Bodhi promises, capturing my gaze. This won't happen to you again.
Tell the humans that I will handle dragon matters,
Taren says.
How?
You will trust me.
It's an order.
Taren says he'll take care of it.
I rock forward and force myself to my feet. Bodhi catches my shoulders gently, wincing when I grimace.
I'm ready. Let's go.
Can you walk? He asks. I nod, looking past him to the tree.
I miss him,
I whisper.
Yeah, me too.
No one carries me. They simply stay at my side, step by step, as we make our way up the hundreds of stairs that spiral through the foundation walls and back to the dorms, our footsteps the only sound breaking the silence around us. Because no one wants to say what we're all thinking. If Andarna doesn't show up at the next formation, Varish's second punishment might just kill me.
You get your running landing yet? Imogen asks on Friday. Sloane is thrown to the mat again, and we wince from the side of the gym, our backs to the wall so no one can sneak up behind us. Sloane's back has none of that protection and is going to be black and blue tomorrow. Unlike Rhiannon, who's in here leading the extra sparring time she negotiated for all of our squad's first years against some others from Third Wing, Imogen and I are here in full uniform between classes for only one reason. Sloane and her terrifying lack of skill. We were hoping to see that she's improved over the week. She hasn't.
Taren won't let me out of the saddle, I say quietly, like he isn't constantly in my head since my near burnout on the mountaintop.
I heard that, he grumbles.
Only because you're listening.
When shifting my weight doesn't help, I take a step off the wall to relieve the pressure on my tight red skin. At least the physical remnant of my near burnout has dimmed to nothing more painful than a sunburn, but it's annoying as hell.
Strengthen your shields and perhaps you won't require monitoring.
Not completing maneuvers? Refusing to bring Andarna to class? Imogen gasps with mock surprise. Aren't you just becoming the little rebel?
Her gaze darts over my face, then drops to my neck.
Your friends still think you lost control during a training session?
I nod. If they knew what really happened, they wouldn't leave my side.
You'd be safer, she notes.
They wouldn't be.
End of subject.
Keep your eyes on your opponent! Rhee shouts at Sloane from the sidelines, just as Sloane does the opposite, glancing down as she nears the edge of the mat. And that's all her opponent needs, the first year landing a jaw-cracking punch that sends Sloane sprawling. Imogen and I both flinch.
This is sparring, not a challenge. Come on, Tomas!
Rhee snaps at a squad leader from second wing.
Sorry, Rhee. Pull it back, Jacek, the squad leader chides.
Damn. Imogen shakes her head and folds her arms.
I get that Jacek's channeling some serious anger, but I've never seen him hit that hard.
Jacek? Like Neville Jacek? The second year from Third Wing Jacinia and I saw hauled away by Markham was listed on the death roll a couple of days ago.
That's his younger brother on the mat, Imogen says.
Shit. Now I feel bad for the guy, even though Sloane is in a similar situation.
I think Markham had him killed, I whisper.
Because he didn't return a book on time? Imogen's eyebrows rise.
I think he asked for something he shouldn't have, and yes, I know that sounds absolutely ridiculous, but there's no other explanation for him being found in his room beaten to death.
Right, Imogen muses. That only makes sense if he's one of us.
To others, it fits in with what Pancheck is calling a particularly brutal start to the year. I'm the only one in our group who hasn't had another attempt made on their life.
You'd better be really careful around your little robed friend if scribes are running out there ordering the death of riders.
Jacinia isn't a threat, I protest, but my words die in my throat as I remember that it was her report that got Jacek taken in the first place.
Let's end it, the squad leader from Second Wing suggests after Sloane gets knocked to the mat again.
I'm fine. Sloane staggers to her feet, wiping blood from her mouth with the back of her hand.
Are you sure?
Rhee asks, her tone implying it's absolutely the wrong decision, which we all know it is.
Definitely.
Sloane takes a fighting stance against Jacek.
Glutton for punishment, that one, Imogen says. It's like she wants to have the shit kicked out of her.
I don't understand. Arik shifts ahead of me, his back blocking the view, and I maneuver to see the mat. I thought everyone marked was trained to fight.
Depends on where we were fostered, Imogen moves forward with me. And after Zayden started to climb the ranks, well, some of the families in charge stopped training us, according to what I'm hearing from the first years. Good thing she wasn't on the challenge board this week. Jacek puts Sloane on the mat for what feels like the 100th time, then brings his knee to her throat, making his point. If this were real, she'd be in a world of trouble. Her first is on Monday, and she's going to have her ass handed to her, if not worse. I unsheath a dagger and flip it, catching it by the tip, like my skills can in any way help her when she won't even speak to me.
Monday?
Imogen turns slowly to look at me.
And how would you know that?
Shit. Well, it's not like she isn't already holding almost every secret that could get me killed.
Long story, but a book my brother wrote.
Who is Sloane up against? She pivots back toward the mat.
You're not going to ask about the book I shouldn't have? No, I, unlike some people, don't feel the need to know everything someone else deems private.
I scoff at the obvious dig.
Yeah, well, you're not sleeping with me. You wish you were my type. I'm phenomenal in bed.
Her nose scrunches when Sloane face plants into the mat. Seriously, who is she against?
Someone she can't beat. A first year from Third Wing who moves like she's been sparring since birth. It had